Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning. The client's name today is Lo. And that's a made-up name because we never use the original names of clients. We protect people's confidentiality. And I'm ready to get right into the story. And this story is just part of her session because we had gone through validations at the beginning. And I'm just going to get right into the context of a deep conversation that Lo has with her mom and not do the other parts. So we had established that it was her mom, and Lo felt very comfortable listening to the conversation that she asked for. And the way that came about was that Lo said, I'm here just to listen to my mom. That's common. I want to say that many people say, I just want to hear what they have to say. And that's a very welcome thing to do that's considered open, meaning I am here to listen to whatever they have to offer. So her mom does it justice, I'll say. And she jumps right in and says, I was very controlling. And this is really what she's asking about. She's asking about and wants me to address my behavior. And for Lo, it's in a whole bunch of ways because she's trying to piece together her relationships and why they are the way they are with other members of the family. While mom was alive, while mom was died, funeral, and post-funeral. So basically, all the stages of Lo's life, right? And her mom's. So she's looking to get answers for that, but she doesn't say it. She just says, I want to hear whatever mom has to say with all of those hopes in, I'll say in a little basket, so to speak, right? Because there's some of them are conscious, I would think. And I would imagine some of them are also subconscious. So her mom says, I was very controlling. And she says, I did things like ordering frequently, often, sometimes kind, like put that there, like where the tone of voice is just, I'll say, it doesn't come across as being bossy, but is still an order of just directing, put that there. Not, could you put that there, please? Put that there. And I said, is that correct? Like to Lo. And she says, yes. She says, that's true. And go on. And so I hear the words go on frequently, but I do. When I'm channeling and the person just wants more depth, and you and I know that if a client is working during a session, that they're sitting there putting puzzle pieces together, right? And that they're I'll say, well, maybe that's actually a really good way to word it because they have to think and try and see how things actually fit into what they need. So her mom continues and says, oh, she says, that's if I was in a good freaking mood. She says, that's if like all the stars aligned. And I said, what do you mean? Do you mean the stars aligned because you don't know what put you in a good mood? Exactly. I wouldn't even know why I was in a good mood, she said, or what could, because every day would be different. And so I say this to Lo and she goes, oh, that's huge for me. She goes, because I walked on eggshells. I never knew. I was always trying to figure out what put mom in a good mood. And I think every single one of us, including dad, was trying to figure it out all of the time, our whole lives, every day, every moment of every day. And so we were always cued into mom's emotions. We were all cued into her facial expressions, tone of voice, speed of voice, the level of ordering. Is it the put it there or is it bigger? Is it abusive ordering? I said, do this, and barking, yelling. And I'll say that mom comments about how her demeanor changes, the facial cues, the body language, so that people picked up on her tension. And as I said those different things, like, and I'll say a few of them, it was the look on her face. It was, compressed lips. It was things like a furrowed eyebrow. It was shoulders tense, like pulled up or squared. Like she would just sort of square herself up, meaning pull the shoulders back and kind of like in a defensive stance. Like I'm bracing for something. And I said to Mom, were you bracing for things? And she goes, oh yeah, all the stuff going on in my head. And I said, oh, so you had like whole conversations in your head? Yes. And I said, with who? With the person that I was going to order. Why? Because I knew what I was going to order them to do. And I knew, based on whoever it was, that if I had to pay attention to their stance, and if I knew that they were starting to get annoyed with me and they were going to come back at me and attack, I had to square up. What did she say, Kelly? Like, it was almost like, I can't remember her expression, if it was square up more or if it was like up the ante. But it was like, well, if my shoulders were here and pulled back and I saw somebody had a look on their face like, oh, I'm done with you. I'm going to start setting boundaries here. I'm going to start ignoring the way that you're treating me. Or I'm going to address it in a kind way. Or whatever they were going to do, it didn't matter what they were going to do. She was like leveling up. She was leveling it up. So it was like, well, I will match you and I will raise you. This reminds me of a card game, but like I'll see you where you're at. And then I will become even more angry and more antagonistic, more attacking. I will use more forms of verbal abuse. And then if the other person felt, wow, like I'm hurt and I can't tolerate that, so I'm out of here. Or I will comply. I will go to my people pleasing or whatever it is that I will do. If that pleased her, then she would stay abusive and at that level or drop it ever so slightly, but not usually go right into, I'll say, I got to watch my words here because I know how much you like words and how you'll correct it. But maybe that's a good thing too. You'll help people understand it in a different way than me. She would bring it down a little bit, Kelly, but like not to where she was actually healthy. So this always kept other people then in a state of fear of her and of being guarded, even if they're trying to be relaxed and go to bed. Mm-hmm. Even if it's time to have your bath, put your jammies on and your house coat and make your cup of tea and sit and get ready for bed. It was like you didn't even know going to bed if you were going to get revved up right before you were going to go to sleep. So this explains to Lo her anxiety now as an adult, that when she goes to bed at night, she revs up as she goes to bed. And I said that. And she goes, oh my God. She goes, I've gone to a sleep clinic. She says, I've bought so many supplements. She goes, oh, Karen, I've gone to a naturopath. I've gone, and not once did I think to sit and tell them about this person's, my mom's behavior, and that the type of thinking I was doing when I went to bed. They would ask me what I was eating. They would ask me what kind of TV, what screen time I had. And that's fair too, of course, right? Because those things can interrupt sleep.
Well, I think it's fair to start with those things because they're the quick topical thing that you can address with just a pattern interrupt. If every profession who was trying to get to the bottom of an issue said, talk to me about how your nervous system got wired as a child, they would have to refer out to a very specialized therapist before they were able to do their job.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. No naturopath, chiropractor, mm-hmm. Nutritionist is saying, I would be happy to take you on as a client. Mm-hmm. Please go talk to a therapist about your nervous system wiring first and come back with the findings and then I can work with it.
To see if it's something I can help you with.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's so well explained. And I think that helps people in all of those fields understand I can stay in my lane and I'm still doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And that they just may need another person. And it may be more than one answer, mm-hmm. right? Going back to that, how complicated our lives are as human beings.
Yeah, and all of those topical things are actually very helpful. And I mean, we all teach them in our healthcare practices. And you can do them really well, and they're not going to solve the problem if your nervous system isn't wired mm-hmm. healthily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this gave her some answers. Lo was so happy at that point because it gave her some answers just in an area she didn't come with that intention. It wasn't on her paper to say, why am I not sleeping at night and why is my brain so busy when I go to bed, especially when I go to bed tired. Like I've done a fun day or a busy day and I'm fatigued. I do everything right about the before bed routine. I get into bed, my mind fires up and it goes to all of these things. Or she was having another issue with sleep, and that was going to bed, falling asleep very quickly some nights, but then waking up at a particular time, like a couple of hours later, based on whatever time she went to bed, where she would wake up with a start and then couldn't go back to bed for hours because of all the ruminating and all of the conversations going through her mind. And then she kind of realized at that point that that was more about stress, but she was still wondering if it was a bladder issue, if it was menopause, like she was still wondering about all of the other issues that it could be that woke her up. And then her mind went into the thinking stage. So this helped her understand, no, the brain is waking her up into this thinking. The stress is waking her up. And she was like, oh, this helps me then. It's the stress part. So it was giving her some answers. So then mom goes in and explains and says a little bit like about the why she ordered and how she saw herself as responsible for everything. I'm responsible for all of these things, too many things. And as a result, I'm stressed because nobody's doing enough. But yet it didn't really matter because I said things like, well, wait a minute, that didn't really make sense to you. And she goes, yeah, I disagree with this one. And I said, well, no, she does too though. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, no, she can agree with you now that other people are doing things. She just wants to order people to have the control over what they're doing. So somebody could be, I don't know, contributing to dinner. Somebody could be setting the table, but it would be to order them then to do something at the stove so that she had control over what they were doing. In spite of the fact that they actually were contributing and helping towards the family meal or whatever it was. And so on. If it was gardening or whatever, there were different examples. But by the time her mom gave a couple of short examples, I'll say one of the examples was the cooking and was yard work. And as we gave a couple of the examples, Lo would sit there and go, oh my God, this makes so much sense. So mom's in a state constantly of feeling over responsible for everybody, for every job. She goes, that makes total sense. Because she would yell and order every person, even if she didn't know what they were doing, it was completely out of context, and we'd all look at each other and roll our eyes. Like, that didn't even make sense. What is she even doing? She doesn't even know that we did it. She doesn't even know so-and-so went and already ordered it or ran to the store to get it. So she sat there and was able to piece together that her mom's panic over feeling the responsibility for every single person and in everything that they did helped Lo understand the level of constantly upping the anxiety and increased ordering. And she said, this helps me understand my mom so much. She goes, why did that happen? Like, why did that happen at all? And then her mom goes back and starts explaining that as a child, she feels over responsible because a dad is missing. He's busy. He's gone. And so I'll say working and doing things. I don't mean that he's an irresponsible father. He's just busy. And the mom stresses so badly about getting things done because when the dad comes home, if things aren't done, then he orders. So mom orders. And now we've got mom and dad ordering. And so she grows up in this family with this form of verbal abuse. And when I said that to her, she goes, verbal abuse? And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, wasn't she just telling us what to do because we had to get it done? And I said, well, no, it could be asked. and you know that. And then she looks at me and she goes, I do know that. And I said, because you don't do the ordering that your mom does. You've got siblings that are like your mom, but you're not doing the same thing. You're learning that you can ask it as a question. You're stepping back to actually look at things and to see teamwork and to make assessments and to watch and then to be able to go, they've got that, instead of thinking I need to control it. And she goes, oh, that's true. I do it differently than my mom. So mom comes in and says, I was terrified of being vulnerable or of failing or not doing things perfectly. I was perfectionistic. And she sits there and Lo looks at me and goes, I can see the perfectionism. I can see it. But it didn't come out always in ways that things had to be perfectly put on the table or like that it had to be perfectly set. But I can see where the meal had to be perfectly cooked or something else had to be perfect. Mom did, like in her hairstyle or like in what she was wearing. And if that was her thing of the day, that she looked good, then I could walk in and go, shit, mom looks good today. I better go brush my hair. Because I knew that if it was a certain thing that mom was focusing on, then I better be on that level because that's where her head was. So I knew then that I could let go of something else. And I would even walk up to my siblings and say, mom doesn't care about this today. And we'd all go, oh, okay, I'll just throw it in a ponytail. And then just throw it in the ponytail. But the siblings were able to walk up to each other and say what they observed. So it was like the first one in the door knew they had to scout out the place and see where mom was at. Oh, she's got her makeup on, her hair is perfect. Oh, she's in the outfit. Oh, okay, it's that. And then she texted her siblings in a group text saying what it was so that they could come in the door and look at their kids and go, okay, come here, let me brush your hair. Okay, come here, let me do this. And they would walk up to their spouse and go, get in the bathroom. Oh, honey, let me fix this. Oh, you got a little lipstick here. And do these things that look like they were tending to each other. But it was, go ahead.
To avoid criticism.
Yes. And I say that because that's how her mom worded it. It looked like it was tending to each other. But it was actually to avoid the criticism.
It's all anxiety.
Yes. And so now the in-laws, extended, or all family, let's just call it all family. It's all of the in-laws that this gets extended to. It becomes white. And then the fight. And Lo goes, oh God, go into that. She says, oh, this is going to help me so much. Because she'd walk up to her husband and try to push his hair or to change his collar. And he'd leave it alone. Because he would sit there and go, I am not tolerating your mom's abuse. I am not, if she wants to come at me, I'll handle your mother. If you won't, I will. And stop touching the kids. Stop it. So this started the fights between the couples. And I'll say some of the disagreements. And at times, eventually, where some of them got on board together and would say, leave my kids alone. Don't correct my children. If his pant leg is up and the other one is tucked into his sock, we don't care. And if mom is going to pick at it and order him to pull it out and start a fight, we'll handle mom. But it caused conflict then because now the siblings didn't really know how to support each other. And even within some of the marriages, so you can see where Lo is sitting there going, this helps me. This helps me understand why certain people in my family stopped coming to the dinners, like to the Christmas, like to the birthday party, where I got really offended that my own sister, her husband, and their children didn't come to my children's party because they knew mom was coming, mom and dad, and they knew the behaviors and the ways that we were treating each other. And they decided that if I wasn't going to get healthier, that or so-and-so wasn't going to get healthy, that the abuse was going to continue. And the triangulation. And
it's not like, pardon me.
Go ahead.
Surface level is offended deeper level, it's a fear of abandonment.
Yes.
You're leaving me here alone with the abuser. And that's the internal feeling, right? Because really we understand, okay, I'm choosing to stay in the abuse, but I see you not making the same choice and I feel abandoned. That's a really hard situation to be in because you have to own the fact that you're choosing the abuse. And I know we can get into a lot of different arguments about like why people choose it and where they're in freeze mode and feel that they can't make a different choice. So I'm not saying that without empathy. Mm-hmm. But there's a choice involved and there's a feeling of abandonment, and feelings aren't facts. So when a sibling chooses or another family member chooses health, they're not abandoning you when you've made a choice about where you want to be. You can have uncomfortable feelings. You can have the unfortunate feeling of, okay, I am alone in my choice, I see. But if we're going to choose to put the anger on the person who chose health or the feelings of offense, as you mentioned, then we're choosing our own lack of health and trying to justify ourselves in our unhealthy choice.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to say at this point in the session that we move into the forms of verbal abuse and talk about Beverly Angell's book, The Verbally Abuse. Patricia Evans' book, thank you. The Verbally Abusive Relationship. We end up talking about Beverly Angell's book, The Nice Girl Syndrome, pointing out Lowe's people-pleasing and training and others in the family at different points in life and then how it changes. And how when one person begins to come out of the people-pleasing and decides, oh my God, this is not authentic, this is not the real me, this is why my partner and my children are angry, because I'm not being the real me, and I'm also trying now to extend my fears and my core wounds onto my children. Instead of dealing with my stuff, I'm now going into all these forms of the defense mechanisms, which is Joseph Burgo's book, Why Do I Do That? And then we went into what you just described, which was at the very bottom of it with the defense mechanisms, which were the core wounds. So her mom does an absolutely beautiful job and a very thorough job of saying, these are the different issues. Here's your people pleasing and resources and the core beliefs that Beverly Angell talks about in that book that we have to get to that go with those core wounds, right? And then how it's presented in, and this was so upsetting to Lo, but her mom presents to her how many forms of verbal abuse she uses on everybody in the family, dad included, herself included. And I see at that point where Lo really cries and really struggles in the session to hear how much her mom was actually suffering. Because there's so much anger towards her mom. And then it's like, oh my God, my mom was in extreme amounts of pain. And then she says to me, why didn't my mom go get fucking help? Mm-hmm. Why didn't my mom do something? She says, there were so many fights. And mom replies and says, well, if that would unravel too much. And I was so stressed that I thought I was already at a 20 out of 10, if that's possible, 10 out of 10. I was already at a 10 out of 10 in stress all the time, constantly, even when I was tired, even when I was resting, even when I was sleeping. She says, I was always at a 10 out of 10. I thought if I went to therapy and the therapist made me deal with any of it or talk about any of it or actually get deeper into any of it, that I would lose my mind. So there's a fear of abandoning herself in there as well. And so Lo sits there and says, my God, my mom was a mess. She was suffering incredibly. And then Lo says, okay, wait a minute. And me. And then she goes, oh, good Lord. And all of my siblings and my partners and my brothers-in-law and my sisters-in-law and my nieces and my nephews. This is a family that's suffering. And I said, that's right. And she says, so is my mom still suffering? And I said, oh, no, she's not suffering on the other side. Does that mean that she kind of gets what we'd call therapy? And I said, yes, you could call it that. You could call it therapy if that helps you associate to something that you could do for yourself here. That means that there's an understanding. That means that there's healthier processes that your mom didn't get. The safety, the security, which is all of the things that a therapist would provide for her, or that we, what a therapist provides on earth for us if we have a healthy therapist. At this point, Lo is crying quite a bit in the session. And this is one of the reasons why I'm really grateful that during the admin part of the session at the very beginning, the very first thing I do in every single session is to say to people that they are welcome to record the session, that they are welcome to use voice to text, they are welcome to use pen and paper if they want to do their writing, but that I really strongly suggest some kind of recording, because at this point, most people, when they're crying and they're really deeply in their feels and the puzzle pieces are really coming together and some of the emotions that we have been compartmentalizing get accessed, and maybe some of them, maybe more than one all at the same time, and we can feel like we're being overwhelmed, it's very important that that recording is happening so that we can just actually feel our feelings and that we're not trying to remember it or try to store it in memory for later. Because that's when I see a lot of people want to stop the healing process of crying and go, oh my God, I've got to make sure I write this down. And it's like, if you're recording, no, you don't. You can actually stay present. And I think it's important and worth saying, because many of us want to not stay present when we're feeling those feelings. And the pen and paper are the distraction that we are actually looking for. Mm-hmm. So I will come with my pen and pencil and paper and write things down, and I won't worry about recording it. I'll rely on this. And we don't realize that deep down sometimes we are sabotaging the session and our healing process instead of setting ourselves up for success when we know we could be recording it. And that could apply to other conversations as well. I'm just pointing this one out in the session because it's what I do. And I think it's good to say to people listening in case they have an upcoming appointment with me. But I would say also perhaps if you have an upcoming conversation with somebody else where you don't want to have to try and remember what was said during the conversation once it's done, that you might like to bring that recorder and ask permission to be able to record something so that you can actually stay present in your emotions. So we wrap up the session with her resources at the end and a little summary of them again, where mom is saying, look it, these aren't any of the resources I went out and got. I sure would like for you to have them. And if you choose to share them with other people, fine, but that's not your responsibility. You're the one that made this appointment. And that's another thing I think is worth saying again today too, is that some people show up to the session and are over-responsible and say, well, I need to go and give messages to my brothers and sisters. I need to go tell my dad what mom says. No, you don't. No, you don't. It is not your responsibility, and that's over-responsibility in the universal laws. You're not over-responsible. So I will also try and remind people when they get into that kind of panic and say that, because they will at the very end of the session. Quickly, what one thing would mom want to say to dad? What would mom say to my brothers and sisters right now?
I think there's an element of over-responsibility, but I also think that's a content tube for distraction when they don't want to deal with their own stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's move on and keep the focus on someone else. It can yes, be different issues. And I'll say either way, you're very much showing your hand.
Yes, and I try very hard to be calm when they're doing that and then bring it gently to their attention that they're doing it, mm-hmm, and say those things. Like, this could be, you know, a pattern, or this could be what you're doing to dissociate right now, or what you're doing to change the subject or to be over responsible. And then these people, not always, some people have more self-awareness and will go, oh shit, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry, yeah, okay, and then come back into the session and be more present for themselves. And notice I didn't say more present for me. It's not about me. It's about them. And some people will panic and then give me five more things to do. Can we do medical? Mm-hmm. And when we have 1 minute left, just give me one minute on my medical. And that again is an attempt from the distraction of the feelings and the pain that they're in and the pattern of, I don't know how to process, so I will distract. Mm-hmm. And typically I have to say, no, thank you. There's 1 minute left in the session. I'm not starting a medical intuitive reading with 1 minute. And they go, oh yeah, I guess that's silly. Yes, it is. But again, I just stay calm in it so that they can see their own behaviors. So Lo did that. She did a lot of those things and I called it out. And then, or I don't mean called it out like addressing down. I mean an education of what you are doing and holding space to not go into feeling shame about it, but coming back into the emotion that you had prior, which may be sadness, anger, or it could be that you were being logical and putting puzzle pieces together. So I tried to give the client that opportunity to do those things. And I saw Lo very much try to get back into and to be present again. And then we closed out the session together.
Okay. Well, I think that's going to be a tough one for a lot of people because the communication dynamics, I think, are very common in a lot of families, mm-hmm. specifically with demanding. So hopefully it provided a lot of reflection. And I mean, there were excellent resources in the podcast too, specifically books mm-hmm. that people can go to educate themselves, to shift communication styles, because that is doable. Mm.
Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.